Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell, I, both honored to be with Bill McKibben. We have the great good fortune to be acquainted with Walter Truett Anderson, who wrote a book called All Connected Now, which I kept thinking about as we were reading through deep economy. It's easy to say deep ecology, mm-hmm. to which you can speak in a moment, but go back to this walk you guys took.
Well, you know, like I say, I've spent a long time worrying about global warming. And one of the things I've worried about is why there was no movement ever that developed in this country to do anything about it. I mean, it's the biggest problem we've ever faced.
Ever.
If there's anything that brings human civilization to an end, you know, I mean, it was either going to be all-out nuclear war, which so far and for the foreseeable future we've hopefully avoided. We've taken a step back from that brink. Or it's going to be all-out climate change, which we haven't avoided and which is coming at us horribly fast. A couple years ago, summer before last, just feeling despair at how little we were doing, I said, well, we got to do something. I called up a few friends of mine in Vermont where I live and said, look, let's go up to Burlington. We'll sit in on the steps of the federal building. We'll get arrested. At least there'll be a story in the paper. That'll be good.
That would be something.
That'd be something. Small from small acorns grow mighty oaks.
You betcha.
But somebody called up to Burlington and the police said, well, we won't arrest you. It's, you know, you can sit there as long as you want. So this intrepid plan was scotched. And we decided just to go for a walk, and we called up a bunch of people that we knew and said, call your friends. And we left a couple of days before Labor Day and walked for 5 days, you know, slept in farm fields at night and things, and just up the side of the road. And when we got to Burlington, there were 1,000 people, which doesn't sound like much in, you know, booming Atlanta, but in Vermont, it was the biggest demonstration there'd been about anything in a very long time. And it persuaded all of our candidates for federal office that they should adopt a pretty radical idea about global warming, that they'd work to cut our carbon emissions 80% in the next 40 years. And it was successful, and it caused us to think that we should try to do it on a national level. And then that was successful too. We did all these 1,000-plus demonstrations last year and managed to get all the Democratic presidential candidates to endorse this same demand for big cuts in carbon. And now we're trying to do the same thing on an international basis, where, I guess next we'll be intergalactic or something. But, you know, we're doing our best. And it's fun just to sort of see how people rise to the challenge, rise to the possibility. It's as if the Earth's immune system is trying to kick in, you know, mm-hmm. and just trying to help it some.
You also talked about a woman who was running for the Republican mm-hmm. nomination, which I think goes to how political will is generated.
This was a very interesting woman, the adjutant general of our state National Guard. And she was running for Congress. She's pretty conservative. And she'd said in her announcement of her campaign that she wasn't sure that global warming was real and we needed to do more research, the same dumb thing that people always say, you don't want to do anything about this. And,
this was 2006, know, maybe?
Yes. Yes, ma'am. And then we did this big march, and it turned out that the more research that was needed to be done was only about the question of how many people would walk across Vermont. It wasn't about physics or chemistry. It was about political will. And we demonstrated that 1,000 was enough, mm-hmm. you know, because she changed her mind and signed up and then was good about it. She worked hard on that issue and talked a lot about it and all of that. It was good for me to see and good for the kids that I work with to see, because we've gotten too cynical about politics. Easy to do.
Sometimes it's cynical and sometimes it's just shut down, that it's such a big problem.
Yep.
And I think everybody has had that. Well, I'm just one person, what can I do? And every time I'm tempted by that, I go back to those 12 people who got around a table in London in 18-something or other, and by golly, they abolished slavery in at least the English-held, the United Kingdom's empire.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we've got to do the same. There's no use. I mean, you know, we've had some wonderful leaders on this issue, people like Al Gore. But there's no use waiting for them to solve the problem. They can't do it. Not, I mean, the obstacles are too high. The power on the other side of big fossil fuel lobby and things is too strong. Unless there's a real movement that develops with a lot of people willing to be outspoken.
One of the challenges, I think, has been the, and actually Dennis Hayes brought this up years ago when we talked with him. He said, you know, in order to avoid being scaremongering, being scaremongers, that we have tended to understate the actual challenges we're faced with.
Dennis Hayes was the one who did all the work to start Earth Day,
the first Earth Day
in 1970.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But he said, you know, in fact, things are really turning out, particularly with global warming, are turning out actually to be much worse than the relatively conservative estimates that were going before. This is now, we're in a crisis. It's not on the horizon someplace.
I mean, the only thing that's changed in the 20 years since I wrote The End of Nature is our sense that this is both larger and coming quicker than we'd understood.
How quickly?
Very quickly. I mean, look at what happened last fall to sea ice in the Arctic.
Fall of 2007.
It all melted.
Yeah.
You know, it'd been vastly more. I mean, the Northwest Passage was open, free, clear. You could sail through it for the first time in human history and probably long before. That's us, and we're doing it in a matter of a few years. I mean, the changes are enormous.
Well, somebody was talking today about Bangladesh, that, you know, that Bangladesh is going to suffer because it's a relatively low country. Bangladesh is already suffering. Mm. This is not. We keep thinking it's on the horizon someplace, and it's right here, right now.
I was in Bangladesh a few years ago when they had their first outbreak of dengue fever. Dengue is a mosquito-borne disease. Mm-hmm. The World Health Organization says it will be the emergent disease of this century. And the mosquito that spreads it, Aedes aegypti, is booming, spreading its range wildly because of the temperatures getting warmer and the world's getting wetter as a result. Warm air holds more water vapor than cold. Well, you know, all around Bangladesh, for the first time, people are coming down with this horrible disease, dengue. They call it break bone fever, because it makes your bones feel like they're going to break. And I can testify that that's what it does, because I managed to catch it while I was there. And frankly, I was the only person who sort of deserved to catch it, you know?
Because it was your fault.
I've spent my whole life, you know, driving things and flying things and pouring carbon into the atmosphere. Nobody in Bangladesh does. The basic means of transportation is the bicycle rickshaw, you know, that you can even hardly measure their carbon emissions. They're so low. And yet they're getting sunk. They're going to be underwater. They're swatting deadly mosquitoes. They're, you know, I mean, it, for no fault of their own, they're completely out of luck.
I have some friends who live in Bangladesh, so it's personal to me, but a lot of people in the United States don't know anybody in Bangladesh, and it's them, it's not...
But they know people New Orleans and Florida.
Yeah, exactly my point. Yeah. Thank you very much. When Florida becomes non-existent, what you talked about, one of the people, I guess it was with the Step It Up 2007.
Yes. People did these demonstrations all over the country, and they were so cool, just beautiful. And the people in Jacksonville, National Wildlife Federation, local chapter, they rented a crane and they pulled a yacht up into the air 20 feet. They said, look up there. When Greenland slides into the ocean, that's where the ocean's going to be. You know, and everybody suddenly got it, you know, all at once.
I guess we won't be going to Disney World this summer.
Yeah,
well, and there's this temptation, which just always amazes me. Well, it'll, you know, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, they'll get to deal with this. Wrong.
That's what, I mean, I think 25 years ago we would have said it was going to be our children's generation, but it's happening much faster than that. It's happening now, and it's going to happen much faster and much more intensely in the years ahead.
You were talking about the year 2012.
Yeah, there are predictions now by some scientists that it's at least theoretically possible that the summer Arctic could be free of ice by 2012. You know, you'll take a picture of the Earth and there won't be that white top to it. It'll just be blue.
Which would have
a very strange sight.
Immense consequences.
Not as much as Greenland, which is, I mean, this is a global condition. It's happening all over the world. Glaciers are receding.
That's right.
This is no longer speculation. The challenge now is to, A, recognize the immediacy of it,
yes,
and secondly, begin to do something about it.
That's right.
And the number is 350. And when we come back, we'll know why the number is 350 with Bill McKibben, who will explain it all when we return shortly. Please do be with us.